first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best foot for money, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome back to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Tuesday, July 30th, 2019. The MLS All-Star, or I guess the skills competition, is currently taking place along with one of the Democratic debates, and the MLS All-Star, I guess the homegrown game, has just finished up as well. A 2-2 draw, and then the homegrowns defeating the Chivas under-20 team in PKs by a score of 3-0 in PKs, so I guess it's 2(2) and then 2(3) on, zero, excuse me, on the scoreline. Sam Vines and Cole Bassett both come on in the second half. Sam Vines is the primary man marking on the play that leads to the second Chivas goal, but then Cole Bassett in PKs converts the winner to get the result on for the homegrowns. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good. I'm trying to try video box this whole situation, which is insane. I got on the Twitter feed. I'm watching the skills competition on my TV. I'm watching Bernie Sanders try to go head to head with John Delaney on Medicare. And I'm looking at your beautiful face on my Skype screen. You know, Matt's wearing a white kit with three black Adidas stripes over the shoulder. I can't see it any other than that though. So what are you wearing, Matt?
I'm wearing my Fulham Tim Ring kit. The championship starts a little bit earlier in the year than the English Premier League, so Fulham will be starting this coming Saturday at 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. They'll be playing at Barnsley. So yeah, English championship getting all set up. You know, you didn't know that, Mark? You didn't know that? I've been to so many of your Arsenal games this year, and you don't care at all about my European team at all.
So many. You've been to one. And you do it just to rub it in, Matt. Fulham they dropped down, right? They were in the EPL last year.
Yes, and so we got relegated, and so now we're in the championship, and so.
Who starts the year in the EPL? Who got promoted?
It's Norwich City, Sheffield United, and Aston Villa.
Sheffield United?
Yes,
wow,
the Blades,
cool
not
sport.
Wednesdays. So,
now
yeah.
I know why they have the swords. That's an interesting one. Yeah, and Burnley stayed up, and Wolves stayed up,
yeah,
and Arsenal stayed up, and Villa.
And Manchester City stayed up.
And Villa's finally back, which, you know, I don't know how I feel about that because they're kind of hot trash, but oh well. I hope none of our three listeners who are Villa fans are offended by the fact that Villa have been bad for about a decade, but you know, it's an exciting thing. It's a good segue to kind of talking about how what a weird year the soccer year is, that like when you start MLS in February, it's freezing, but you're super excited about the fact that like with the preseason and then with the beginning of the actual games in March, you're just absolutely overloaded with soccer. Like there's just a soccer game on every 8 seconds of the day.
Mm-hmm. And then you, between CCL and Champions League, like you're filling out the midweek as well. You potentially have something from Tuesday through Thursday as well.
And then June hits and it's like, you know, it's like a junkie who's freebasing four or five different drugs. Then suddenly it's down to like, all right, you're just getting heroin now. Like you just get, well, calling MLS the black tar heroin is probably not a good way to do it. It's more like now it's just marijuana. You can only smoke the marijuana. And then August comes
way
in.
Way to stay on brand there, Mark.
I don't know. And then August comes in and let's end this metaphor. And then August comes in and then you're back to like, oh my God, we're going to be absolutely inundated with so much sport. We can't even deal with it. I mean, not only that, but like when you have kids or when you coach, it also means that you're going back into coaching at the same time too, because the fall and spring seasons are when youth soccer comes in too. So like, I actually have to work on a coaching badge, you know, get ready for the English season, get ready for the Israeli season, you know, keep an eye on the MLS season. It's crazy in a good way.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you, Mark. I look at it a little bit differently in that I think that there is a spring into early summer and a late fall into early winter sports equinoxes. There's two equinoxes. So the first one, for me, officially kicks off when March Madness happens. At that point, MLS has already started their league as well, along with CCL. You obviously have everything going on in Europe that's still, you know, in the heat, you know, with a lot still to play for, even if, you know, there are a bunch of teams that know they're not going to get relegated and a bunch of teams that know that they're not going to win their respective league. And that basically runs normally all the way through the end of the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals that are usually into early June. We got an extra sweet one this year, at least from a soccer standpoint for you and me, in that we got the Gold Cup and then obviously the Women's World Cup that ran us through to July. And now, you know, I'm looking at it, you know, we're 2 days away from August, and the Miami Hurricanes, Mark, actually have the first college football game day of the season this year. We're playing on August 24th. At Camping World Stadium, where Orlando used to play. It used to be the old Orlando Citrus Bowl, and we're playing Florida, the University of Florida, in a neutral site game. That's really cool. So then, like, that for me, college football and that Labor Day weekend normally kicks things off, and then you get really rolling once basketball and hockey restart in October. And for me, that goes basically all the way up through MLS Cup, and you could even stretch it into Thanksgiving. And then at that point, it's bowl season, and then, you know, it's just surviving the 2 months of MLS offseason. So yes, it's wonderful sports thing. Let's close out this banter with Mark. I guess, you know, we acknowledge the existence of the homegrown game. Do we care at all about the All-Star game? You know, Atletico Madrid coming in and all. I guess, you know, don't get as embarrassed as that crappy other team from Madrid played against them a couple days ago.
I think sports is
that was
fun.
A Real Madrid joke, fans, friends.
Yes, yeah, I just ignored it completely. Not that I'm a Real fan, but the All-Star game. I think it's fun. You know, just seeing today, there was some clips at the media kind of meet and greet, handshaking. You know, Zlatan and Wayne Rooney were really happy to see each other. They were, you know, joking about their good old Man U days. And they were also, you know, kind of, it's a different situation than when they play each other as opponents in MLS because they're on the same team. You know, the game doesn't actually mean anything. It's one of those great moments where, everybody can kind of relax and have fun. I think that that's great. And but I will say that I really love the existence of the skills competition because I just love that. I mean, I think that, an actual 90 minute game of soccer, between two teams in the middle of an actual season is kind of ridiculous, you know? But to have the best of the best show up and try and curl a ridiculous 40-yard shot to see if they can do it. I mean, I really enjoy that. That's way more. So I just like that. I like the All-Star weekend. I like all the kind of pageantry. I like the concept of like a celebration of Major League Soccer. Do I need a 90-minute soccer game between a European team and the MLS team? No. But I do like all the bells and whistles that go around it.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that front, Mark. You know, I'm someone who I don't care for the All-Star game as it currently is constructed, but I'm not hating on it. So for the people who want to enjoy it, by all means, watch the skills competition. Maybe you're watching Cole Bassett and Sam Vines earlier today as we were recording. You know, maybe you're super excited to see Atletico Madrid. And if it's your European club that's playing in it, maybe it's a bigger deal to you. You know, Mark, maybe you were way more excited for the All-Star game. Was it in San Jose where I think Arsenal played the All-Stars? I might be misremembering it or anything, but so, you know, if it's your team that's involved with that, then that's just, you know, that's like the soccer Super Bowl for you personally, depending on your European allegiance and then which one of your MLS teams, you know, maybe they have a representative playing in that game, for example. So, I mean, if you're a DC United fan who's also an Atletico Madrid fan or an Orlando City fan who's also an Atletico Madrid fan, I could see how you're super excited for this week. And I have nothing against you being excited for the sake of maybe getting things a little bit more interesting. On a continental front, as we're kind of seeing with the League's Cup now, I'd be a little bit more interested in seeing maybe a League MX team in there. You know, Club America, I think, would do fantastic from a sponsorship and a marketing standpoint, and that'd be super fun. And I think it'd be really cool to see some of these players and teams who have we've seen familiarity. They've grown in familiarity through CCL. Have them play in other formats. You know, whether that's, say, Club America coming and say their U20s plays the homegrowns, and then the senior team plays the MLS All-Stars, and then having those players involved in skills competitions when they played a Michael Bradley or a Joseph Martinez or somebody else in CCL in years prior. I think that would be cool. That's maybe my only complaint on the structure. It's a little bit hokey. You know, it's not supposed to be taken seriously, but it's pure fun. And if that means Cole Bassett is banging in spots from the PK and Wayne Rooney's not making somebody, you know, and Zlatan's doing a full dribble with nobody marking on him tomorrow, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I just want to add that right now, the skills competition is introducing all the fun celebrities that are sitting pitch side watching it. So, it's Kaká, Alex Morgan, like 2 Chainz and Dulsta. Dulsta, I don't know if you follow this, but he's a FIFA video gamer who's been at the FIFA World Cup representing MLS because he's their best. But like, and I could be wrong about 2 Chainz. I'm just, you know, kind of catching it off the side of my eye. But these are the kind of random folks that show up at these kinds of things. It's like that kind of celebrity pageantry ridiculousness. I'm all in for that kind of stuff. Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco himself.
Okay, there you go, Mark.
Ocho Cinco supposedly really good at FIFA, by the way. He apparently takes people on all the time and just absolutely beasts them. Like, he's the kind of dude who will just tweet at you, show up at your house an hour later with a bag of Pringles, and then kick your butt 10-0 at FIFA and then roll out. Like, that's just amazing. I love it.
Oh, I did not know that. That is not something I would have expected at all.
FIFA master.
Alrighty then. Okay. Speaking of things that were also kind of a surprise and a little bit unpleasant, Mark, this past Saturday at Avaya Stadium, the Colorado Rapids were not victorious. They lost to the San Jose Earthquakes, who are on an absolute roll. The final score was 3-1. Not 80 seconds into the game, Lalas Abubakar. Commits an own goal on a nice little play with Tommy Thompson connecting to Christian Espinoza. They try to find Chris Wondolowski at the back post doing his lurky Wando poacher stuff. Lalas Abubakar tries to prevent that easy tap-in and accidentally puts it into his own net. You had a couple good counterattack opportunities for the Pids in the first half. Sam Nicholson with a nice run, and then Daniel Vega, I believe, is the goalkeeper for San Jose Earthquakes. Absolutely stone-cold stops Diego Rubio when he and Kai Kamara had a nice combination on there. Vaco does some dancing around in the 34th minute off a nice pass from Nick Lima, gets around Keegan Rosenberry, creates a space where he can shoot between the two center backs and scores to make it 2-0. It's 2-0 at halftime. Mark, did you see the banter that Kai Kamara had in the first half?
No, what did he do? He was...
So Kai Kamara fouls, I believe, Nick Lima in the 24th minute, is given a yellow card. Looked a little bit soft to me. I believe it was Kai's first foul in the game. It might have been the actual first foul of the game. And somebody picked up a video of Kai having some banter with Baldomero Toledo. And based on the audio and lip reading, it was something to the effect of, "You're looking at me like you do your job. You guys are the worst." I don't know if he was saying that at Toledo or the fourth official, because it was right next to the centerway line, so maybe I'm not sure who that was pointed at, but Kai Kamara doing usual banter stuff and then gets subbed off in the second half. Jay Salinas scores off the bench in the 83rd minute with a fantastic run completely up the sideline and then cuts completely inside, doing a number on Keegan Rosenberry and then burying it in the bottom corner. And then Diego Rubio effectively in garbage time in the 88th minute off of a pass from Jonathan Lewis, and that shot got deflected, goes over everybody's head and finds its way in. But the Rapids lose, and the Rapids lose in a very unenthusiastic way. I think a way in which they did not start the game properly. They didn't really make a whole lot of adjustments. And by the time they actually adjusted and started doing anything good, San Jose was playing with the scoreline and knowing that they were comfortably in control up 2-0 at halftime. Rabbi Mark Goodman, what was your good thing from this past Saturday's loss?
The only good thing about this loss was that last week on our program, I predicted that the Rapids would lose this game 3-1, and they lost this game 3-1. So the only good thing was, for maybe the only time this year, I nailed the prediction. Other than that, this was a pretty much an all-around bummer for the Colorado Rapids, who, you know, I mean, there's not a lot you can do when you give up the lead 2 minutes in on the road. There's just, you're in deep caca at that point. There's just nothing you can do. So Matt, what's your good thing? If there's any.
I mean, I still think even when they're not playing well as a whole, and even when the whole of the 90 minutes is pretty abhorrent from the wide players, they are still able to create chances. And I would say that of the entire front four, and I would include the Andre Shinyashiki subbing on for Akai Kamara. So effectively the front four, of which in any given time was a combination of five different players. You know, Sam Nicholson didn't really have a great game, but he had a couple moments where he was able to create chances on his own. Didn't get a whole lot of touches. I'm kind of curious as to why Jonathan Lewis, was effective with the minutes that he got and the touches that he got, but just didn't get that many of the opportunities. Maybe, like, Sam Nicholson was just open on the wing more so than Jonathan Lewis was. Maybe they were worried about the marking between Jonathan Lewis and Tommy Thompson, perchance. But, you know, just given the way things were going, I would have thought, let's try an outlet and get Lewis more touches on the ball. And that didn't really happen until it was already 3-0 and then Jonathan Lewis assists on Diego Rubio's goal. But, you know, Rubio had a couple chances. You know, he shoots it right at Daniel Vega, who had perfect timing and completely reacted to that opportunity off of Kai Kamara. I don't know what else I could say about that in terms of, you know, maybe Rubio takes his touch or something, but I look at that play and I say fantastic save by Vega, and I could say that about the one opportunity that Sam Nicholson had. So I agree with you overall, a pretty terrible performance, you know, an unenthusiastic and an uninspired performance, but there were still some of these little moments where you saw that they were able to create chances. They just got a few good quality chances that weren't enough in volume, and they just gave a boatload of chances away to San Jose. And San Jose is a better team and a team that finishes their chances better, and they were playing at home and they're a great team at home. So shrug emoji. I don't know. Mark, what do you?
They're having an amazing season. I mean, that's the amazing thing. You know, their turnaround is insane because it's entirely due to their coach. Their lineup has almost no significant changes from last year to this year. They've just gotten a better use out of almost every player. I mean, moving Tommy Thompson to right back was a mind-blowing decision, and it totally works, which is shocking.
Yeah, and Almeida looks like a genius because of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of genius-looking things that, like, they weren't getting anything out of, Eriksen or Vaco last year. And Huijsen and now Huijsen, and now they are getting things out of all three of them. They got 9 goals out of Wondolowski. It's a mind blowing thing, which we may have talked about a little bit last week, but I think it really plays into a conversation that we're going to be having over the next couple of weeks, which is a coach can change everything. Now, like for the Rapids, we could frame that in the context of Hudson to Connor Casey, but we can also frame that in the context of Connor Casey to whoever is supposed to be taking the post next, which is clearly not going to be Josh Wolf anymore.
Yes. So I guess I'll throw to it with bad things, Mark. Just we've seen a lot more individual defensive mistakes that have caused the Rapids to concede goals in recent weeks. And in particular, that has been against better opponents, and that has been against opponents who are able to take better advantage of those Rapids mistakes, where Lawless Abubakar maybe does a poor marking job and leaves Fernando Adi open for a chance, and Adi ends up flubbing that over the post, as we just talked about, whether it's Vaco or Eriksen or Chris Wondolowski. Those players right now are going to bury those chances. An Hebert or a Maxi Morales in the game against NYCFC are going to bury those chances. So, you know, I don't have a lot of complaints, or Lawless Abubakar isn't getting the biggest slice of the blame pie for me on the first goal. You know, you look at it, Sam Vines could have done a better job marking with the overlap from Espinosa on the initial play, and then, you know, Tommy Smith could have gotten something on that initial cross down there. Once that cross is headed towards Abubakar, where he's kind of handling it with the angle and everything, you know, he's in a similar situation to the Axel Schuberg own goal, I believe, against the Houston Dynamo, where if he tries and gets a touch on it, it's 90% an own goal, and maybe 10% he somehow keeps it off frame. But if he doesn't do anything, then it's absolutely a goal for the opponent. And so, you know, I'll take the probably something bad, and maybe I make a play and that ends ends up being the biggest defensive play of the game, or absolutely let it happen, in which case Chris Wondolowski's trolling me as he runs towards the crowd to, you know, jump in and hang out with the supporters after scoring a goal. So, but, you know, that was bad. The center backs, I thought both could have helped out, Rosenberry, a little bit more, on the Vaco goal. And I mean, at that point, like, the goal for Shea Salinas, like, is the team just giving up? And we can talk about the team in terms of not having the talent, in terms of individual mistakes or anything, but when you just flat out let Shea Salinas just completely run through and, like, basically dunk on you, then I think, at that point, I think Connor Casey would be valid in going into the locker room and thinking, okay, guys, like, what were you thinking? Like, this is a move that says to me that you should not be starting. And if nothing else, even if that doesn't matter to Connor Casey, that's a play that potentially a head coach who's interviewed with or looking at joining the Rapids looks at that and says, that's a guy who I can't count on for 90 minutes. And then your job is ultimately at risk with that. So, you know, I understand that the result's already decided at that point, but the third goal is probably the most deflating for me just because of the, you know, the implications of what we can draw from it, just in terms of where the effort was at that point.
The Rapids are way ahead of every other team in Major League Soccer in terms of own goals conceded. They have 5. The next most team with own goals is the Vancouver Whitecaps and New York City FC with 3. Then there's 3 teams with 2. Then there's like 5 teams with 1. And then there's literally a dozen teams that have conceded 0 own goals. So, Matt, as much as I love you, you're wrong, and you're going to stand there in your wrongness and be wrong in the sense that, like, I want to forgive the players for, you know, what else can they do? They, you know, there was nothing better that they could do, but, like, there is something better they could do, which is not concede an own goal. Like, you know, these are elite athletes. They don't get passes. They don't get excuses. They need to contort their bodies and figure out exactly when to jump in such a way that they clear the ball and not put it back into their own net. And that's, like, job number one. So I know I'm being tough, but, like, you know, just cutting down on own goals probably would have given the Rapids somewhere between, 8 and 14 points more this season, which would automatically put them into potentially. I'm just saying potentially. Maybe it only gives them, you know, 5 points. Maybe
okay, that's fair.
Maybe it turns a one tie into a win and 2 losses into ties. But, like, the point being, like, own goals change games, and this team could be sitting in 8th instead of, you know, 12th if they, or maybe they're in 11th right now. If they could just cut down on putting the damn ball in their own damn net.
I guess I don't have any disagreements with what you just said, Mark. I think the one rebuttal that I will say in the context of comparing the Rapids to the rest of the league in terms of number of own goals is there are other own goals that I think have been more egregious. I think the Axel Schuberg one against Houston and then the Abubakar one against San Jose this past week, you know, were the hardest ones to do something about. Tommy Smith could have done much better in the game against Portland when he conceded that own goal. And then I think Keegan Rosenberry had an own goal as well in the game against Houston. He could have done better in those. So, you know, Abubakar
would have lost to Houston either way, though. We probably would have lost to Houston either way.
So Abubakar still deserves a chunk of the blame pie for that first San Jose Earthquakes goal. There are other players who deserve a significant chunk of that blame pie. And on the list of now 5 Rapids players who have a slice of own goal pie in 2019, Abubakar is hardly the largest. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, these are all, you know, these are all cracks in the ship that is gradually sinking down to the bottom of the Colorado River that is going to end the Colorado Rapids season without playoffs. And at this point, like, this team can't afford to have these mistakes. So as understandable as it might be, or as, you know, oh, that's unfortunate, but there's not much he could have else done with it. Like, this team can't keep relying on that from a benefit of the doubt standpoint. They need to massively overperform their existing track record. And I would include Lawless in that list as well for them to do something. Like, they can't keep having these bad bounces. They need to do miraculous things with bad bounces, and they need to take advantage of every single chance they have. And none of that happened in this game, and rightfully so. The San Jose Earthquakes were, you know, ahead and ultimately got out of there with 3 points. Any other bad stuff, Mark, or shall we head on to big thing?
I think for me, the bad thing was definitely the own goals. The other thing was, although I didn't really expect them, based on what I said last week, to adapt in terms of the coaching to the man marking system that San Jose uses. It's not super great to watch them fall flat on their face immediately in San Jose. A different coaching setup and a slightly more thoughtful approach to the game might have allowed them to get out of San Jose with a draw. Like, I wasn't, you know, I'm all about being pragmatic on the road, especially against a team that's got some trickery to it like San Jose. So I guess my other bad thing here is that it's a small coaching failure to get blown out on the road against a team that has a totally unique approach to the game. So that's my bad thing. My big thing, Matt, to pivot over to that is it, we can unofficially, officially, hit the, stop button on the season. The Rapids have 12 games to go, but are 11 points below the playoff line. It's possible mathematically for them to make it into the playoffs, but 538.com has them at a 1% chance of making the playoffs. And another statistical guru who I follow online has them at a 0% chance. I think it's rounded. So it's probably somewhere between 0.4 and 0.1. Mm-hmm. But it's another way of saying, like, they're cooked. They're done. There's no way they're making the playoffs. For the next couple games, the Rapids have the ability to keep hope afloat, but not in a good way. They play Montreal at home and San Jose at home. So those are both somewhat favorable games, I think, for Colorado. They then go on the road against Minnesota and Houston, both of which are winnable games in my humble opinion, but I think it'll be difficult for the Rapids to get a result. Then they play in the Rocky Mountain Cup Derby. And then after that, the rest of the schedule is a freaking train wreck. It just looks like a lot of games that they're going to get beasted into in my opinion. There's a lot of road matches, and it becomes bleaker and bleaker. So, you know, we can keep hope alive for four games, but I wouldn't highly recommend it. I think we're just in that, weird, netherworld space for the next four games where we can't officially say that the season's really over and there's no hope in making the playoffs, but we also can't reasonably think that these games are going to be meaningful. Like, you know, if they win all four, then they will keep hope alive. And if they, you know, split the results and pick up 6 points out of 12, then it'll definitely be official. And that's a bummer because I'm the only relief, Matt, is that I don't write about the Rapids anymore, because for 5 years I wrote about the Rapids, or 6 years now I wrote about the Rapids, and for five of those 6 years we got to this point where
you got 2 months of season left and you got to try and find something to write about.
That's right. And there's nothing to say, and there's only so many ways that I can say. There's only so many ways I can write, look at our young players, aren't they exciting? Or, gee, won't it be interesting to see what we do at the transfer window? Or, gee, I wonder which players are going to get fired when we rebuild the roster. Like, I've done that five times, Matt. I'm real good at it. Mm-hmm. I'm really relieved to not have to do it. But, like, these four games are the least fun to write about, because there's very little, you know, tactics don't matter. I mean, the only saving grace to this whole, to these four games, in terms of narrative, in terms of a sports writer trying to say something about this team, is this would be the time of year when I would anticipate that a coaching change will be either made or announced. That, like, I would expect that by the end of the month of August, the Colorado Rapids will announce who will be the coach next year. Will it be Todd Ramos, or will it be somebody else? You know, like, who's the exciting possibility, and will they come in, or will we let Connor Casey lame duck his way to October 6th? We'll see. Matt, what's your big thing?
I have the exact same thing, Mark, so I'm just going to quote tweet it and maybe pick it up where you left off as far as last names. If you remember, listeners, when we did our season preview, we talked about how the last third, quarter of the season was going to be really critical for the Rapids. If I'm correctly, I don't have this in front of me, but I believe it's 10 of their last 13 are against Western Conference opponents, and then 7 of their last 10 in the regular season are all on the road. And I think we said, Mark, I want to say we said October 1st or sometime around this week that if the Rapids weren't comfortably in a playoff spot, then it wasn't looking good in terms of their season. So now, obviously, it seems really unlikely for them to, you know, climb back in. As I wrote a couple weeks ago when I did a playoff perspective piece going into the game against NYCFC, you know, I said it wasn't really about point difference between the Rapids and the Red Line. It was difference between number of teams that they had to jump. And so I said, you know, if they won on another 7-game unbeaten run like they did when Connor Casey took over, that puts them in a position to where they're now in the middle of the pack of, at the time, I want to say it was Houston, Dallas, and Real Salt Lake, and they needed to jump two of those three teams. So now that's looking unlikely. And then, so for those last 10 games, Mark, those three home games that they have are Seattle Sounders. That was the rescheduled game from the Bomb Cyclone. LA Galaxy, and possibly the only time maybe that the Rapids are actually going to play against Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and then FC Dallas on the penultimate weekend of the season as well. Those are three teams that currently right now are in a playoff spot that presumably will still have something to play for when they come around to those games. The Seattle and LA are both in the first 10 days of September, and then FC Dallas, I think, is maybe that last weekend in September because the season ends on October 6th at LAFC. So, I mean, I agree with you, Mark, that we can comfortably say at this point that the Rapids are not going to make the playoffs, that they're going to have to top the 2015 Seattle Sounders in terms of their run in the back third of the season in order to make the playoffs. And, you know, we're getting to the point, I'm not proud of this, Mark, but just again pointing out when, you know, some people thought I was jumping the gun a little bit when I suggested the Rapids can win the wooden spoon. You know, Columbus Crew and Chicago Fire are on 24 points. Vancouver Whitecaps are on 21. The Rapids have 20 points, and FC Cincinnati have 17. I haven't looked at the schedule for all four of those other teams, but, like, it's plausible that the Rapids go on a bad run and then just figure, oh, a bunch of road games against a bunch of really good teams, let's just mail it into the season, that the Rapids are once again fighting for the wooden spoon at this point. That, you know, is, you know, it's a sad thing to say, especially given where this team was at the beginning of the month.
But they never win it, Matt. It seems like we always wind up losing the wooden spoon down the stretch to another team, which is like, I'm only half kidding right now that, like,
and you realize the difference between the Rapids being in, having in winning the wooden spoon as of now and not is that game against FC Cincinnati, folks.
Right. But that's amazing that, like, we can't even win the trophy that says we're the worst team in the league. We're second best at being the worst. We can't even pull the big trophies for being terrible. I don't know. I'm looking at the NFC Cincinnati final schedule. They have 3 home games of their last 4. The bad news is they're against Atlanta United is one of those games. But they have a decent schedule. You know, they end the season against DC United away in a game that'll probably be meaningless for DC United. And if I were them, I'd start their bench. You know, they've got a game, against Toronto coming up, and Toronto hasn't been great this year. Their next game this weekend is Vancouver. So it's going to be a tight one for the wooden spoon, Matt. I'm definitely thinking that Cincinnati is the favorite for the wooden spoon, though.
All right, Mark, that's what, when we get to the point when it's an, oh God, what do we talk about this week? I think we're gonna do another preview handicapping the wooden spoon down the stretch with like a month to go into the season. All right. Hashtag content, folks. All right, Mark, shall we move on to other and hopefully not as bad stuff?
Let's hope. I don't know if there's a lot, you know, I mean, the nice thing is that, like, there's not the hand-wringing, chest-palpitating angst that there is when they lose games in the early season. Like, the fate is sealed. The nails are in the coffin. At this point, it's like, yeah, we're going to take some L's. Maybe we'll take a couple scalps on the way. You know, maybe Sam Vines will get a goal, you know, to break the seal for himself. Like, that'd be fun, you know? There's some good things when you take the pressure off.
All right, listeners, this coming Saturday, August 3rd, 2019, the Colorado Rapids will host Montreal Impact FC or Impact de Montreal Football Club. So this will be on Saturday. It'll be at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, your usual home kickoff. The Montreal Impact are a very good and very interesting team, Mark. They are sixth in the Western Conference. They've got that second to last playoff spot. They've got 34 points off of 24 games played, a 10-11-3 record, with a negative 7 goal differential, and then their road record this season is 4-7-2, not too shabby. Colorado Rapids, as previously mentioned, are again bottom of the Western Conference, 20 points off of 21 games played, 5-12-5. Is that still a palindrome, Mark, or is it the fact that it's not 11 in the middle make it no longer a palindrome?
Oh, that's a very interesting way of putting it. I don't know. My name is Adam.
In any case, the Rapids have a 5 wins, 12 losses, and 5 draws in the season, a negative 12 goal differential, and their home record at DSG this year is 4-6-2 in regular season play. The Impact are probably, along with the Philadelphia Union, Mark, the least celebrated great story out of an Eastern Conference, which has been an absolute crapshoot this season in terms of trying to figure out who's good and who's bad. At time of recording, listeners, the Eastern Conference between the top of the East, Philadelphia Union in the one seed, and Toronto FC, who are the last team out of the playoffs, is just 7 points. The Eastern Conference is a crushed soda can in terms of those seven or eight teams that are competing for those 7 playoff spots, and then obviously all the seeding that's going on in between them. And the Montreal Impact are in the middle of that, and they're doing that, Mark, with basically up until the last 2 weeks, no Ignacio Piatti, who was the one player who single-handedly got them to the playoffs in his entire time with the Montreal Impact. They have a very, very good defense that is led, of course, by Evan Bush, Zakaria Diallo is their main center back that they have. They have Saphir Taider, the French DP who they have, who's their kind of shuttle running number 8, who's got a pretty good touch. I believe he scored a brace in Montreal against the Rapids last season as well. The new Finnish winger who they have on loan is Lasse Lapanielin, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He scored 2 goals. Say that again, Mark.
I said wow.
Okay. Lapalinen, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. In any case, he had a brace in his MLS debut against the Philadelphia Union. Looks absolutely fantastic, Mark, so that's something to be concerned about. And then the aforementioned Ignacio Piatti, who's normally been a left winger for Montreal, since coming back to injury, has been up top, underneath and alongside Maximiliano Urruti, who fans will remember from his time with FC Dallas. This is a workmanlike team, Mark. This is a team that does not have a lot of flashy players. This is also a team that does not have a lot of distinct weaknesses, and Remy Gard is one of the most pragmatic head coaches in all of MLS, and he definitely tunes things around to trying to take away what the opponent does well, and then also make sure that they emphasize what they do well. And they've got a bunch of very talented South American and Europeans on this team who could definitely torch players like how the Rapids have right now, given how those Rapids defenders are playing. And then, of course, even though he's been on the bench recently, Mark, we do have to highlight Michael Azira being a backup midfielder in the holding capacity for Montreal Impact. Mark, what do you see in the Impact? What do you see in this game on Saturday?
Well, I had that Daniel Lovitz at left back is one of the better left backs in MLS last season, and he's been pretty good this season as well. He's really a standard, solid two-way left back, kind of like Edgar Castillo, a lockdown defender with good speed who can also serve a ball. So he's a little bit different than Sam Vines, in the sense that Vines has a good motor. He keeps going and his defense is excellent and he's excellent at serving the ball. But in terms of actual flat out pace, I think Lovitz is probably going to be faster than him. Saphir Taider is really, you know, was doing Piatti like work all season and a little bit of last season, without, Ignacio Piatti, available because of injury. They've also been mixing and matching lineups all season because of injury. And then Zakaria Diallo is a fantastically strange story, because the guy is 32 years old. He transferred at the beginning of the season, or at the end of 2018, from a career basically spent with second division teams in France. So if you had told me that this guy was going to be a significant addition to the team, I would have told you you're crazy. But he's been an exceptionally good center back. He's started 21 games for Montreal, and he's really kind of tied the whole thing together, which is pretty impressive for a guy who is kind of an afterthought. Shamit Shome is also kind of your other shuttling mid, and this is just a really hard-working team. You know, they just keep running, and I think that's Remy Gard's MO, that he wanted to go out, you know, tighter, and Shome and Lapalainen and Lovitz, they don't stop, and they just outwork you. You know, they remind me on some level of an English Premier League team with lower skill level, which is that when you watch EPL, you're amazed that there are very few pauses in the action, that the tempo is just high, high, high all the time. The guys are just running, running, running all the time. And MLS has more lapses and pauses and kind of doldrums, especially after minute 30 and after minute 65. But in, you know, that's where Montreal gets you, is that they explode. They just have, they track down balls. They work for second balls. They go into duels. They go in hard. And that's where they're going to get you. And, you know, to finish off the whole thought, that's where a guy like Michael Azira, is their kind of guy. It's a relief, I think, for Remy Gard to not have to put him on the, starting lineup if they don't need him, because he's best as a lockdown end of game closer type guy. You put him in, you have him with fresh legs, chase the ball for 30 minutes, and destroy, and then you go home with your win. And this is a team that's kind of built that way, that they run around and just make it really difficult for you. And I don't think the altitude is going to bother them in the least.
I agree with you, Mark, in terms of, I think Montreal Impact are one of the hardest working teams in the league. I would put the Philadelphia Union up there, yep, and I'd put the San Jose Earthquakes up there. Yep. And they kind of had, I don't want to say it was almost serendipitous, but when Ignacio Piatti went down, I want to say second game of their season, and they knew he was going to be out for a while, that they had to go through some adjustments. And what they've become now in terms of being a hardworking team, in terms of being an intricate team where it's like a machine, and if one of those pieces fails, the entire thing comes down. That forces accountability amongst the players for themselves, holding each other accountable, and the coaching staff holding them accountable, to the point where this is how they had to play and how they had to come together as a group in order to be successful. And they kind of thrived off of that, where everybody else in the Eastern Conference was figuring their stuff out, because, you know, Toronto had the whole thing with Giovinco coming and going, and then obviously Atlanta had a slow start with Frank DeBoer, and the New York Red Bulls got off to a slow start, and all those teams had, you know, stumbles in the beginning part of the year, you know, with CCL and everything. That Montreal just said, we're going to sit, we're going to be extremely pragmatic, we're going to be really hard to break down, and we're going to work hard, and we're just going to flat out outrun every single opponent that we absolutely have. And that works perfectly. Remy Gard is a very old school manager in that aspect. At times when Montreal's been very, very poor in his tenure, he hasn't been, you know, he's the first one to come out and say, we're not giving the effort enough, this isn't good enough, I'm going to make changes if I have to. Whereas opposed to, you know, you look at Anthony Hudson, for example, who's apologizing or, you know, dancing around when someone like you or me in the media tries to ask a question about a specific player who isn't giving the quality of performance that's absolutely necessary. Remy Gard goes out there and goes completely scorched earth and immediately gets a response from his players. I have no doubt, Mark, in like MLS 2.0, Remy Gard could take a team made up entirely of Mark Birch's, Michael Azira's, and Jared Watts's, and get them to just elbow grease their way to the last spot in the playoffs in the Western Conference. And so when you do that on a team that has a little bit of talent, has a little bit of international quality, find some things that absolutely work, Tidair is able to fill in some of that void that you lose with Ignacio Piatti, and then Piatti gets right in back into the team team as you're coming into form and as you need to start making a run for the playoffs, and then you make possibly a really good signing in Lossy coming in to provide that winger threat to where now Piazzi can be more of the central string puller and everything. Like, I don't know if this is a team that's a favorite. I don't know that this is a team in MLS markets, particularly American MLS markets, that people are going to be thinking about. But this is the kind of team to where if Remigard gets them on a roll in the last month of the season, even if they have to go on the road for the playoffs, if I'm Atlanta United, I do not want to have to play them. If I'm New York Red Bulls or Toronto FC, I do not want to have to play this team on the road, just with them being on the, with the Montreal being on the road at one of those teams, just because of how they play and the way that they work, and they have no distinct weaknesses, and they're just going to make your life absolutely miserable. And in that, Mark, I agree with you that I think where other teams start to feel it in the 70th minute and then are completely gassed by the 80th minute, I would not be shocked at all if Montreal Impact are still running full breath come 80-01.
Yeah, last player to mention, just because I'm an Arsenal fan and that's just a thing that we have to do by contractual obligation, is Bakary Sagna, the right back for Arsenal, former French national team Le Bleu fullback, is also on this team. He didn't play their last match because he had a red card in the previous match against Columbus. But you can expect him to come in at right back. The other thing is, you talked about Remigard being exceedingly pragmatic. He has not lined up the formation really the same very often. I've seen three different formations out of Montreal this year, a 4-4-2, something more of a 4-5-1, and, or, you know, depending on how you look at a 4-2-3-1. And then, a couple weeks ago when they played Columbus, it was really a 5-2-3. Mm-hmm. So you really don't know what you're going to get with, this team. And I think that that is, if you're the kind of Rapids fan who our listeners generally are, who are educated and intellectual and thoughtful, you know, you can watch, see how the lineup comes out an hour before the game and think, like, what does that mean? Why are they doing that? And then watch and see how it plays out on the field, how they attack the gaps, how they create space on the field, how they move the ball. And it could be a tactical masterclass. It could be another one of those moments where a smart coach comes to town and, or we come to town against them and outplays us. So.
Mm-hmm. I guess on that note, Mark, do you want to give a prediction, or at least how you think the game's going to go from a tactical approach, or what the Rapids could try to do to get something, you know, to get a result against Montreal?
You know, both teams, we've been talking about Montreal. It's always hard when we do these predictions, Matt, because I'm so excited to watch Major League Soccer and I love all the other teams and all the other players, and I'm so interested in them that I almost always convince myself that we're going to lose. But I feel good that Colorado has a lot of good pieces that can match up in this situation pretty well, that if you know going in that you're going to have to outwork, you know, a counterattacking team like the Rapids do match up pretty well against Montreal. So I feel like there's a 2-2 draw in this game for sure for the Rapids. Like, this is going to be an explosive game. It's going to have a lot of it's going to have some lulls, but it's definitely going to have some up tempo back and forth. Potentially those last 15 minutes could be real exciting. So this game could very well end up 2-2 or even 3-3 if I wanted to go crazy.
I'm going to agree with you on the result and on the scoreline as well, which of course means that it's absolutely not going to happen. I'll take 2-2 in this one as well, Mark. I think it's going to be a lot of cat and mouse in terms of one team bearing down on the other and either creating a really dangerous chance that potentially leads to a goal, or overcommitting themselves and then a mistake happens or a turnover happens and somebody gets out of a bad situation and then it's off to the races. It's going to be a lot of setting a mid-block confrontation and then counter, and then almost counter-press off of that, if that makes sense. So, like, I definitely think both teams have the attacking pieces to get that done. I do think that the Rapids are going to have to be much more prudent and clinical with the chances they do get against Montreal, given what their defense looks like, and especially given what we've seen from the Rapids the last couple weeks in terms of finishing. I guess maybe the two big concerns that I have here is, remember, Kai Kamara was coming off of injury, and then he did not play the full 90 minutes. He only had the first half in San Jose. And then Ignacio Piatti, who still also is coming back from injury as well, only played 62 minutes. Granted, at that point, like, I think they were already up 2-3-0 on Philadelphia. So maybe that was more of Remy Gard thinking, like, let me not risk my big star player given the results already there. I do think that Remy Gard could be coming to this and thinking, just because of the altitude and the schedule that they have, that they're content with a draw. And in that, they might be open to limiting Piatti or Tyder on the amount of minutes that they end up playing, and in that, maybe they're thinking, oh, if it's 1-1 the 80th minute, let's just pack it in and protect for the draw. So that might be one thing that I'm a little curious to see how it ultimately ends up playing out, but I think Montreal definitely has enough quality attacking pieces to break down the Rapids and get a result. Can the Rapids lure them into some good traps and then get some numbers advantage to where Jonathan Lewis and Sam Nicholson can get more of those extremely dangerous opportunities they're able to create? And when they do that, can whoever's on the finishing end, on Andre Shinyashiki, Akai Kamara, Diego Rubio, can they take advantage of those chances? If that happens, I think the Rapids can get a result and get a draw. If it doesn't happen, then I think we're probably looking at another 3-1, 2-1 result loss for the Rapids. Shall we head on to Ask HTHL, Mark?
Let's do it.
All right. We've got two Ask HTHLs this week. We'll start with the earlier one that's a little bit more hilarious. Mark, did you see the cat running on the field in the League Cup matchup between RSL and Tigres?
Apparently, he's been signed to a 3-year contract worth $150,000 per season. I mean, you know, he had the reflexes, he had the quickness, he had the acceleration, you know, pace and power in that feline, Matt.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, Gignac could have gotten him the ball in that. So in any case, listeners, for those of you who don't know anything, in stoppage time of the League Cup game that RSL ended up losing and Mike Petke, you know, is potentially getting suspended for a couple of weeks now because of, Tigres is up 1-0 in stoppage time. Gignac is running towards a ball and trying to get something going on the counterattack. And out of nowhere, as he touches the ball, a cat, just runs out onto the field just past him and just past the ball, runs towards the end line, cuts across, goes behind Nick Romano and behind the goal, and then ends up on the other side of the field completely. And so, of course, everybody was having jokes about that. As you know, there's been a couple instances in recent memory in world football with cats coming onto the field and them having, you know, producing memes off of that. And then RSL actually had a duck that came onto the field, Mark. So, like, fans were, like, comparing, like, the heat map of the cat versus the heat map of the duck and whether or not, like, they could play together or, like, alongside, or what that would mean for Joe Plotz's future, for example. In any case, Tyler maybe asks us, who's faster on the outside? Jonathan Lewis, Sam Nicholson, or a cat? Which I'm going to assume he's referring to this cat specifically. Mark, you're a holding midfielder on counterattack. The high line has just worked in terms of creating a turnover. You've got the ball and you're looking to hit a long 40-yard diagonal ball to spring a counterattack. Which one of those three options do you want wading into open space and onside?
Who is the middle option?
Sam Nicholson. Jonathan Lewis, Sam Nicholson, or the cat.
Well, I just looked it up, and the top speed of a domestic house cat, according to Google, a Google search that returns www.speedofanimals.com, which I don't know how legitimate that is, says that the top running speed of a domestic cat is 29.8 miles per hour, whereas I think Usain Bolt topped out at like 34 miles an hour when he was going his absolute fastest. So, I mean, like, you know, 27.8 miles per hour is the fastest speed, over 80 meters of Usain Bolt. So as much as I'm inclined to say Jonathan Lewis, cause I like the way he dribbles the ball, I'm going to go with the cat, Matt. I'm going to go with the cat. It's just science tells us that this is the fastest thing that you can put on a soccer field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'll take the cat as well, but I'm gonna put a caveat that I think this is all three players, in air quotes, I think at their absolute fastest in terms of what they're able to do. You know, whereas, like, you know, the house cat, like, yes, they do a lot of running, but they also do a lot of sleeping. So I don't know that I'd want the house cat for the whole of the 90 minutes, because maybe they get scared, or they're going to get lazy, or they're going to want to sit down at some point. Whereas, you know, I think Jonathan Lewis has that for the whole, you know, if this is a 90-minute performance, I'm taking Jonathan Lewis. If this is a 20 to 30-minute super sub situation, I'm taking Sam Nicholson. If this is one sprint to the beep test, I'm taking the cat. So if this is a counterattack in stoppage time and we absolutely need this, otherwise, you know, we're eliminated from the playoffs or we're not going to go to the World Cup or anything, I'm taking the cat. But if this is a whole of 90-minute performance that we need, I'm probably taking Jonathan Lewis. So yeah, I'd start Jonathan Lewis. I would sub on Sam Nicholson. And then I would say in the second half of extra time, so the 116th minute, I would sub on the cat.
Yeah, the problem with the cat, and everybody who's either – I had a cat as a kid. I had a couple cats growing up, and I also had a dog. The problem with cats is they don't really follow manager's instructions real well. You know, a cat might very well just lie down in the middle of the pitch and, you know, comport itself by just licking its groin for 30 minutes when you're in the middle of an attack. And that's problematic if from a soccer tactical perspective. You never want a player, Matt, who would prefer to lick his own groin rather than actually play the match. So, you know, I mean, personally, maybe if I had a choice, I might go with a greyhound or a whippet as a better option. You know, a dog will come when you call. A dog will follow instructions. You know, a dog is loyal and friendly, and you know, as long as you can and also that post game celebration, you know, you're going to the corner, he'll lift his leg and then he'll probably lick you in the face and it'll be who's a good boy. I mean, that's what I gotta say. I know I'm going off the reservation a little bit by saying let's switch it to a dog.
Moving on, our second SKGHL that we have comes from Jody Robbins. Jody, hello again. Jody asks, hashtag SKGHL. Now that the new coach bump has faded, are the Rapids going to announce a new coach? Also, are there any rumors about the summer window moves or not? Summer window, folks, closes, next Wednesday. It's August 8th, whatever day of the week August 8th is the last day of the secondary transfer window, and that is Thursday. I do not have the time off the top of my head. But in any case, Mark, you talked about it a little bit earlier. What are we seeing as far as timing, given the run of form of the team, in terms of making a head coaching decision? And I'll start by answering it myself. Until that happens, I don't think we're going to see any moves by the Rapids. And if we are, they're going to be something that's very minor or something that just creates flexibility, you know, like a Danny Wilson to Oxford United, for example. Like another, there's no Kellen Acosta, Lawless Abubakar, Jonathan Lewis trade that the Rapids are making to improve the squad between now and next Thursday for me.
I have a source that has told me that the Rapids are planning to sign a South American player, but I don't know whether that move happens between now and August 8th or whether they announce that in November when there's like less pressure and they have a little bit more negotiating time. The only reason you bring a player in now so they can spend a little bit more time getting acclimated. So I think there's an advantage to that. The downside is the Rapids are short on TAM, and they have a couple DP positions opening up when the season ends. So they do have the TAM that they might have been spending, although we don't know exactly how much money was being used on him. But they do have a prorated amount of the TAM that is left over from when Nana Boateng went back to Europe. So there's a little bit of money there, but you know, it's not a lot. So they can't really sign a DP or even make the DP announcement until November. So you're right, Matt. I agree 100%. There's probably not a big move there. There was a second question there, and I forgot what it was.
Now that the new coach bump has faded, are the Rapids going to announce or hire a new head coach?
So the head coach question is, I hypothetically think that they have, or I have been told by folks, other reporters who've been following the situation, that the Rapids have just been waiting for the right moment, but they actually have, a new coach in mind. Whether the situation has changed because Connor Casey proved himself is interesting, whether my information is still good, a month after expiration date is good. But it is almost certainly, unless there's some big surprise or I've been out of the loop for too long, it is down to Robin Fraser and Tab Ramos. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think, I hypothetically think that we'll find out that one of them is the new head coach by the end of August. If they decide to stretch it out and announce it at the end of September, I would be surprised because I don't think that that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I've been wrong before. I mean, I had an entire article about how we were going to lose to LAFC. And so I am okay being wrong on occasion. It's better than not saying anything interesting at all.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. So I agree with you that from everything that I've heard, it's down to those two main candidates. There wasn't a whole lot, after, you know, news broke that with Josh Wolf, that just the numbers were too far apart in terms of what the Rapids wanted from a salary structure standpoint for the new head coaching contract vis-a-vis what Josh Wolf was looking for. And, you know, in a way, Josh Wolf is quote unquote going home, you know, having spent so much time with the Columbus Crew that he's now, I guess, rejoining, you know, the cluster, you know what, that is Precourt Sports Ventures in Austin, Texas. So I think, Jody, to answer your question, I think if the Rapids are making a decision, I'll say sometime between now and we'll say the day after Labor Day Monday, so whatever that Tuesday, September 3rd or 4th is probably. If it's between now and then, it is going to be one of those two candidates. If it's we get to that point and that isn't happening, then I'm starting to wonder if maybe Pork's looking at you know, another international contact or something, or maybe drawing it out and thinking, you know, let's just have the season play out. Let me make some decisions as it is, just from a money standpoint, what makes sense for some of the contracts. Tommy Smith, for example, who has a team option year next year, possibly trying to get an exit out for a Danny Wilson, for example. Who knows what that means as far as Jack Price's security with the team as well. And then maybe making a decision once that flexibility, you know, making those moves potentially in conjunction, or knowing that we already don't want to bring this player back. Let's bring in a coach who wants that with the team structure they have with the younger core, the Americans. So, you know, the Keegan Rosenberries, the homegrowns, the Kellen Acostas, et cetera, et cetera. So I think one thing where maybe the Rapids have a golden opportunity in this aspect, Mark, is it was those three candidates, the Americans that we mentioned earlier. But at the time, that was when there were rumblings about three head coaching openings that happened. You had, because it was New England Revolution, the Rapids, and then FC Cincinnati that all made coaching decisions within like 3 weeks of each other. And that's when rumblings also started that Austin FC was going to start looking at filling some of their main big positions that they have. Obviously, I have a head coach now, no technical director or general manager as of recording. And so in that, potentially the Rapids were competing with other people. But then in that time, New England Revolution filled in Bruce Arena. I don't see Bruce Arena going with INE, with Tab Ramos. Tab Ramos and Robin Frazier aren't in that Bruce Arena coaching tree. I think Bruce is either going to coach, or he's going to appoint one of his guys who he had either with the national team or at some point with the LA Galaxy onto that position. Obviously, FC Cincinnati is going Dutch in more ways than one, and it's looking like increasingly that they're going to be looking for opportunities in that space. And in that, they still have some time with some, you know, coaches who are going to be made available, who are either already available or who, you know, aren't getting picked up, for the start of the Eredivisie season, you know, or around in other places in Europe. So potentially they're shopping up names as well. In that, the Rapids are kind of, you know, in the same way that we're in a netherscape, Mark, from a journalistic standpoint of trying to create narrative, the Rapids are in a great place narrative wise because there's no other impending head coaching positions that are open that the Rapids are potentially having to compete with a Tab Ramos or a Robin Frazier who are fielding calls and offers from other teams as well. But if we get to the first full week of September, and like that's when other teams are starting to make changes, realizing that things aren't working out. So I look at unfairly, potentially, Mark, say a Caleb Porter who's not having a very good season with Columbus Crew, for example. You know, I look at maybe given some of the recent events, you know, whether or not they make the playoffs, could that be make or break for a Mike Petke, for example? You know, I don't think Peter Vermees is going anywhere, for example. You know, James O'Connor hasn't been impressive in the 18 months he's been in charge with Orlando City. You know, if we get into the middle of September, that's when other teams normally start firing coaches in order of saying, okay, let's hit the reset button for next year, in which case then maybe those American candidates start getting interest from other clubs as well. So the Rapids are in a nice position where they're maybe the only open table right now, and those two coaches are looking for a place to sit down and have dinner. So that's an opportunity opening for the Rapids to maybe negotiate and then have their full attention right now. If we get to the first full week of September, I have to think some combination of things didn't work out with those head coaches, or the Rapids are looking to go in a different direction, or they're just flat out saying, let's just wait our time a little bit more to get a little bit more information. And in that, are willing to let one of those two, or possibly both of them, walk to other MLS teams in favor of other resumes or other contacts that maybe Pork or the rest of the organization has. That might all just be purely speculative. Like, watch, Mark, we're going to drop this, and then like next week, the Rapids are going to have a new head coach in place as well. But I think that the timing of things, I think, is going to be critical in terms of understanding whether or not the Rapids are going for a Robin Fraser or Tab Ramos, or looking somewhere else. As the team, continues to slip further and further away from realistically making the playoffs. Mark, any comments that you wanted to make any further regarding the transfer window, and could the Rapids make any moves?
We always, with the Rapids and with Pork Smith, there's always the likelihood of a $50,000 trade of Gam for $50,000 in TAM. That's my one prediction. We're going to get one of those weird ones, or maybe an international slot in 2023 in exchange for a hypothetical allocation order switch between the 9th and the 10th spots.
Now that I think about it, Mark, the Rapids haven't used their allocation spot. Don't they have the number one allocation spot?
They do. I think we're actually holding on to it in order to wait till some other MLS team has a player that they really, really want and then flip it for like $200,000. In TAM, because I don't think, personally, in my humble opinion, there's not a single player out there coming in who I think makes a lot of sense for the Rapids. But you never know.
Okay, yeah, and I guess I'll throw it up there as well, Jody. I would not be shocked at all if we saw some moving of draft picks and lower level assets as well. Not anything that are actual players, but some combination of future international spots, some combination of future GAM and or TAM, and then a draft pick as well, just because depending on who that next head coach who comes in, they might prioritize or deprioritize the MLS Super Draft. So then maybe the Rapids are looking to move up, like we've seen in the past with an Andre Shinyashiki, or maybe they're looking to, just hoard all the fourth round picks that they can to get the next Nicky Jackson, Dominic Baggi, Michael Azira, etc. So I think we could see something like that it's like, oh, there's a 100-word press release, this totally doesn't matter, but then, that pick turns into, like, a Marlon Hairston character in, like, 3 years' time or something. So we might see one of those, but I would be shocked if we saw any influx of a player who's taking up a senior roster spot, targeted allocation money, an international roster spot, or a DP, and I wouldn't hang your hopes on anything more than, Mark's, flipping of Gam for TAM at this point. Well, all right, set. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard, Pittsburgh Soccer Now, and Last Word on Soccer for all of our word content, @Rapids96Podcast on Twitter. If you want to get at us, use the #AskHTHL to submit a question that you'd like us to talk about on air. Our DMs are also open as well. If you want to get in touch further, or if you've got something that's longer than 280 characters, Rapid96Podcast@gmail.com. I check that at least once every couple of days. And then subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on pretty much every podcatcher everybody's requested, and most recently we just joined the iHeartRadio app, so you can listen to us both online on your smartphone, tablet, or PC, and then you can also get us on the iHeartRadio app, I guess on your tablet or phone as well. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week.